This is Saved by the 90s, a new show from KX93.5, celebrating 90s and early 2000s nostalgia. Each show, we're going to highlight a specific element of pop culture and interview a notable guest about it from that era.
Saved by the 90s!
But why me? Why now? Well, I'm Tyler Russell. I'm 27 years old. I'm a radio host in Laguna Beach, California. And like you, I find myself constantly daydreaming about the good old days, about Nickelodeon GAC, about wondering whether my Tamagotchi will live or die because I forgot to feed it, about connecting my Game Boy to a friend so we can evolve my Kadabra into an Alakazam. Kids these days, I don't think they get it. And it seems like now, more than ever, with the gradual takeover of technology, we need to look back and fondly remember a simpler decade. So let's go back to a time when kids' show names didn't start with a lowercase I or a hashtag. Let's start with the best of the best, Boy Meets World.
When this boy meets world, boy meets world, wandering down this road that we call life, is what we're doing. It's good to know our friends will always stand by me. When this boy meets world.
Some of us discovered the show during its first run in the 90s on ABC, but some of us didn't find it until Disney aired reruns in the early 2000s. Either way, seeing Corey, Topanga, Sean, Eric, and others survive high school, fall in love, grow up, go to college, and of course, learn life lessons from Mr. Feeny was more than television. It was a reflection of our own formative years. But what was the secret sauce that made it so special? Well, today we'll find out from one of the actors, Ryder Strong, who played Sean Hunter in Boy Meets World and plays him still in Girl Meets World, which he also directs. He'll be on the phone to tell us how the show influenced an entire generation. Welcome to Saved by the 90s. In Boy Meets World, Ryder Strong plays the bad boy Sean Hunter, a troubled youth from a poor family who had been in five different schools before he was 12 until he eventually lands in middle school in Philadelphia and befriends Corey Matthews after saving him from an animal pen at the zoo. But maybe aside from that, did Sean really do anything all that rebellious? Here's Ryder.
Was Sean really that much of a bad boy? Like, what did I mean, he blew up a mailbox? Like, you know, Boy Meets World is very funny because we have all these, you know, these archetypes of the characters, but a lot of that is because the characters talk about the way they are. They don't actually do the things they're talking about all that often. Like, you know, Sean Hunter, like, I ran away from home, maybe. I did take a road trip.
You wore really, a leather like, jacket. Whole, that's basically,
I wore a leather jacket.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. Right. Sean wore a leather jacket and was poor.
We may have watched television characters grow up in front of us, but we also watched the actors go through their teenage years. Many of the activities the characters took part in were reflections of what was actually going on in their adolescent lives, and Ryder was into some pretty adult subjects.
There's the whole fact that Sean became a poet for no reason for, you know, a couple episodes, and that was entirely because at the time I was really into poetry, and I was reading and writing poetry, and I think the writers just knew, you know, I mean, it was kind of a weird thing for this 17-year-old kid to be into poetry, and they were like, that's weird, and then they talked to me about it, and then it was like, all right, we're gonna put that in the show, and then they did, and then, you know, I ended up writing the poems for that Sean wrote on the show, and then you know, like, I took a road trip one year when we were when we were on hiatus with my friends. I took like a 6-week road trip around the country, and they wrote that into the show too. So like the next season when I came back, you know, and I came back to the show, and I had grown a goatee, and the writers were like, what have you been doing all summer? I was like, oh, I've been driving around the country, and they're like, we're going to use that. That's totally going to be, Sean's going to go on a road trip to try and find himself. And, you know, so yeah, they totally incorporated parts of us, you know, because they don't know. I mean, you know, these are 35, 40-year-old dudes trying to write for, you know, 16-year-olds, so they would dip into our lives every once in a while, definitely. The point is, I am not, definitely not Sean Hunter, but obviously, like, there's so much intertwined with us just because, you know, I was playing him for so long, and obviously that's what people know me as. So I think there's a lot of association by default, you know, and no one can hear my voice without thinking of that character because my voice hasn't changed since I was 13.
Okay, but how did a show about stuff like that, about seemingly meaningless high school relationships, airing on Friday nights on ABC, where it really couldn't find its audience, become the cultural phenomenon that it is. Here's Ryder talking about when he realized that the show meant something to so many people.
I don't think it really clicked for me until way later, until the 2000s. Because while we were doing the show, we got okay ratings, but we didn't get great ratings. And we lasted for 7 years, but there was this sense that, you know, we were part of GIF lineup on Friday nights, and there was this sense that there were other shows that were more successful than us, basically. Like, yeah. Sabrina the Teenage Witch, for instance, had higher ratings. And we you know, I think our fans were young, and therefore not, and there wasn't an offline internet culture the same way there is now. So we didn't hear from the fans the same way that I think we would now, or that kids shows nowadays hear from their fans much more immediately. So we always kind of felt like we had our own little corner of ABC that nobody cared about. The network didn't really care about us. Yeah, so we had fans come to our live tapings, but, you know, at most that would be 100 and 200 people or something. And we just never really knew what kind of effect we were having. We hoped. We just didn't know what we had, you know. And when we didn't really get it until I started getting really approached when I was living in New York, like 2004-ish. You know, because people started getting older and they started coming up to me and, you know, in bars or wherever I was out and saying, you know, I grew up with your show. And also what started happening then was they were rerunning on Disney Channel.
Yeah, that's where I first started watching it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we really found our audience, oddly enough. And I think, you know, it was on every day all the time. And it just, you know, it wasn't, because we were a primetime show. And I think as a primetime show, we weren't a huge hit.
Yeah.
But as a daytime kids show, which we became once Disney Channel started running us, we were part of a, you know, a new network, because Disney Channel was just sort of becoming its own real established network at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then so it wasn't really until the mid-2000s, I think, that we really hit. Which is weird. And now, you know, it's so crazy that it's lasted this long. I mean, it's great.
Why do you think that is? Why did it resonate with people so much? And what did they take from it that made it such a big deal?
Because we weren't crappy, you know? Like, Saved by the Bell was a shitty show. Like, our show was good. Like, I mean, I really believe that. Like, we cared about what we were doing. Yeah. We had more developed characters. We didn't, you know, like, a lot of sitcoms, like Saved by the Bell, get mean. You know, like the big jokes will be that the characters demean one another and make fun of each other. And if you watch our first season, we did some of that. You know, we had a Minkus character who was like, make fun of the nerd. And then even Topanga, when she started, was like the hippie. And she was so weird. And it was like, and we really grew out of that.
So, if Fred is 25% slower than Al, then 25% of 6 minutes is... anybody? It's a minute and a half, which leaves us with 4.5. 4.5 minutes is the correct answer. Hold your applause, please.
Mr. Minkus, you're wrong.
Wrong? As in, not right?
You know the law of averages better than I do. It was bound to catch up with you. Where are you going?
Nurse.
Minkus, you're wrong.
I've been waiting to hear those words since preschool.
By second season, we started evolving and, you know, treating all the characters with respect. And, you know, I mean, it's not like I can take any credit for this, by the way. It's all the writers, you know, Michael Jacobs in particular, who created the show. He really started to care about the characters and make sure that we were never dismissive. And then, you know, the backbone of the show was always Mr. Feeney, and the fact that Mr. Feeney was teaching us a lesson about life.
Yes.
Not just teaching us in the classroom. And I think, you know, it's cheesy, it's on the nose, it's expositional, but at the end of the day, it's better to have that than not. And people, you know, I think enjoy it, they laugh when they're kids, and then if they catch it when they're older, they're like, wow, this show is actually kind of dealing with some real stuff, you know? And yeah, there are times then it becomes very special, episode-y, you know, and it's not great. But then there were other times when I think it really worked and we struck a nice tone somewhere between being sentimental and being really, you know, a drama show.
Right.
And I that makes us last. And I'm proud of that, you know, because you look at, you know, you can make fun of the fashion, like, you know, it's ridiculous, and you can make fun of a lot of aspects of it, but you can't really take away from Boy Meets World, like, at its heart, we really believed in Cory and Topanga's love, and we never made fun of it, we never treated it disrespectfully, it was like a real thing. And so when they got married and when the show went that direction, it was like, no, these are real people, and this is a real thing, and we're going to make, you know, it special. And I think that lasts. I think people remember that from their childhood, and you know, as opposed to, I think, a lot of other teen sitcoms, just, you know, they would throw characters under the bus. They didn't care. Like, if it was a good joke, bah. If the, you know, the actors suck, they'd fire them. They'd get rid of that character. And, like, we held on. And I think it's come back to us. It didn't really help us at the time, but now I think it's coming back in a lot of great ways.
You know, a lot of people grew up watching the show, whether they saw it on ABC or on Disney Channel, and they grew up learning these life lessons from Mr. Feeny, like you mentioned, or relating to whatever character they related to. Are there things that you learned on the show that are kind of reflected in what your characters learned, too?
Well, I made the joke when Boyhood came out. Like, you know, people were like, they watched, you know, this guy, they filmed it, so he grew up. And I was like, you mean like a TV show? Because that's just what TV does. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Yes, they compress it into an hour and a half or 2 hours, but, you know, the idea of an actor growing at the same age as their character has happened a lot, and it happened for us. And I, you know, there is something cool about that. There's something magical about that if you were the same age, or even if you're watching it later, you know, while you're going through your own adolescence. Yeah, you know, I mean, I remember breaking up with my first girlfriend while doing the show and, like, being so heartbroken, dramatic, and not wanting to work. And, you know, meanwhile, we were doing episodes about Cory and Topanga breaking up. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I remember reading the scripts as they were coming in and being like, oh, I totally get how Cory feels like this is the end of his life, because this is how I feel right now. And I'm going through it while we're making a show about it.
But there was one man who got the characters and the actors through any of those problems. Mr. Feeny was the difficult, stern, yet somehow lovable teacher who imparts pearls of wisdom and life lessons on the kids in nearly every episode. And William Daniels, the actor, actually comes back in Girl Meets World, the new show on Disney Channel that Ryder is directing and starring in as Sean Hunter again. Here's Ryder talking about working with somebody who had such a great influence on his life and on his career.
It was so good to see Bill again and work with him. It's like, you know, and it's so funny for him because here's this guy who just had a legendary acting career. I mean, he started doing Broadway when he was 5 years old. You know, he's been acting his entire life. And at this age, when he goes around town, you know, he has a place in New York. When he walks down New York, like, people don't come up to him and say, The Graduate. They don't come up to him and say, 1776. They run up to him and say, Mr. Feeny. And he loves it. He loves it, you know, because he was discovered by a whole new generation that never would have paid any attention to him, you know. And I think when we started the show, he had no idea what he was getting into. He was like, what is this? I am, because he had never done multi-camera before. I mean, this is somebody who, you know, he'd won 2 Emmys for Saint Elsewhere. He's like a really, really serious, incredible actor. And so here he was, you know, with two, you know, kids trying to wrangle two crazy young 13-year-old actors and talk to them seriously. And I think, you know, in the end, he is so proud of Boy Meets World because it ended up being, you know, kind of one of his most lasting legacies and the one that he, you know, has enjoyed the most this later part of his life.
Is there something you learned from Mr. Feeny as a character, as Sean, that was the same thing that you learned in real life at the time?
You know, not specifically. I mean, I just think that the values of the show, particularly the values of friendship and the fact that the things that you do when you are a teenager and the relationships that you have with your parents, with your teachers, and with your fellow kids, your fellow teenagers, that those are important, that they're not some, you know, frivolous aspect of your life that you should forget about and move on from and grow out of, but instead that these are connections that actually make you who you are. And that's, I think, the broadest message of Boy Meets World and Girl Meets World. And I completely agree with that. I mean, I think that, you know, as much as, you know, I've creatively moved on, like, a huge part of me is the experience I had on Boy Meets World. And, you know, and then in my personal life, I know certainly that the friends that I had at that age are, you know, were the defining friendships of my life. And, you know, whether you're still best friends with everybody or whether you're still dating the girl that you dated when you were 15, which, you know, in Corey DeBanga's case ended up being the way the story went, you know, it doesn't matter that you take those things seriously and that you treat them with respect and know that, you know, your behavior and how you treat other people matters. Like, that's, you know, dream, try, do good, like his last final words does. Like, I still believe that, you know, pretty beautiful.
We wanted to know if you had anything else left to teach us.
Believe in yourselves. Dream. Try. Do good.
Don't you mean do well?
No, I mean do good.
For a lot of us, Mr. Feeney was responsible for an early life enlightenment, a renaissance of realizing there's more to this world than the Disney Channel. He teaches viewers lessons in the show, like a real hero is someone who does the right thing when the right thing isn't always the easy thing to do. And if you let people's perception of you dictate your behavior, you'll never grow as a person. In the 90s, Mr. Feeney saved us. So what, on a more personal level, saved Ryder Strong? What non-Boy Meets World thing from the 90s stands out to him?
Well, that's very easy. It's the Counting Crows album, August and Everything After.
Oh, so good.
couldn't have changed my life more. You know, that was like, it was right when Boy Meets World started. I remember the first season. We were filming the first season, and, you know, I was living in Northern California, and the band was from Northern California, and it was just like, you know, it was the album for me at 13, and that just defined that year, and a lot of my teens were spent sort of listening to that album. So, you know, and I still love it. I listen to things on vinyl, and that was one of the first, like, vinyl records I had to buy, you know, and it's one of those that it's very dated just because it was so popular in the time, but actually, like, you listen to it, it's still a pretty perfect album. The lyrics are incredible, and it's a wonderful album. So,
love it.
Definitely that one.
Well, Ryder Strong, we really appreciate you taking time. I know you're a very different actor these days, but it's really cool to see you as Sean Hunter on Girl Meets World and fun to analyze a show that touched all of us so deeply. So thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you very much for listening to the first episode of Saved by the 90s, each week highlighting a specific element of 90s and early 2000s pop culture. Next week, Rob Paulsen, cartoon voice actor who plays Yakko in The Animaniacs, Pinky in Pinky and the Brain, Raphael and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and many more. I'm Tyler Russell, and from us at KX93.5, dream, try, do good.
Step out the front door like a ghost into a fog where no one notices the contrast of white on white. And in between the moon and you, angels get a better view of the crumbling difference between wrong and right. Well, I walk in the air between the rain, through myself and back again, where I don't know. Maria says she's dying, through the door I hear her crying, why I don't know. Round here we always stand up straight. Around here, something radiates. Maria came from Nashville with a suitcase in her hand. She says she'd like to meet a boy who looks like Elvis. And she walks along the edge of where the ocean meets the land, just like she's walking on a wire in a circus. Parks her car outside of my house and takes her clothes off. Says she's close to understanding Jesus.
knows she's more than just a little misunderstood. She has trouble acting normal when she's nervous around here. We're carving out our names around here. We all look the same around here. We talk just like
nothing, nothing, brown.